An Osho Talk. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, Truth, Godliness, Beauty, Number 4.
How can I love better?
Love is enough unto itself. It needs no betterment. It is perfect as it is. It is not in any way to be more perfect. The very desire sows a misunderstanding about love and its nature. Can you have a perfect circle? All circles are perfect. If they are not perfect, they are not circles. Perfection is intrinsic to a circle. And the same is the law about love. You cannot love less and you cannot love more because it is not a quantity. It is a quality which is immeasurable. Your very question shows that you have never tasted what love is. And you are trying to hide. Your lovelessness into a desire of how to love better. No one who knows love can ask this question. Love has to be understood not as a biological infatuation, that is lust, that exists in all the animals. There is nothing special about it. It exists even in trees. It is nature's way of reproduction. There is nothing spiritual in it, and nothing especially human. So the first thing is to make a clear-cut distinction between lust and love. Lust is a blind passion. Love is the fragrance of a silent, peaceful, meditative heart. Love has nothing to do with biology or chemistry or hormones. Love is the flight of your consciousness to higher realms beyond matter and beyond body. At the moment you understand love as something transcendental, then love is no more a fundamental question. The fundamental question is how to transcend the body, how to know something within you which is beyond, beyond all that is miserable. That is the meaning of the word matter. It comes from a Sanskrit root, matra. It means measurement. It means that which can be measured. The French word meter comes from the same root. The fundamental question is how to get away from the miserable and how to enter into the immeasurable. In other words, how to go beyond matter and open your eyes towards more consciousness. And there is no limit to consciousness. The more you become conscious, the more you realize how much more is possible ahead. As you reach one peak, another peak arises in front of you. It is an eternal pilgrimage. Love is a byproduct of a rising consciousness. It is just like a fragrance of a flower. Don't search it in the roots. It is not there. Your biology is your roots. Your consciousness is your flowering. As you become more and more an open lotus of consciousness, you will be surprised, taken aback with a tremendous experience which can only be called love. You are so full of joy, so full of bliss, Your each fiber of being is dancing with ecstasy. You are just like a rain cloud that wants to rain and shower. The moment you are overflowing with bliss, a tremendous longing arises in you to share it. That sharing is love. Love is not something which you can have from someone who has not attained to blissfulness. And this is the misery of the whole world. Everybody is asking to be loved and pretending to love. You cannot love because you don't know what consciousness is. You don't know the Satyam, the Shivam, the Sundaram. You don't know truth, you don't know the experience of the divine, and you don't know the fragrance of beauty. What have you got to give? You are so empty. You are so hollow. Nothing grows in your being, nothing is green. There is no flowers within you. Your spring has not come yet. Love is a byproduct when the spring comes. And you suddenly start flowering, blossoming, and you release your potential fragrance. Sharing that fragrance, sharing that grace, sharing that beatitude is love. And there is no question of making it better. It is already perfect. It is always perfect. If it is, it is perfect. If it is not perfect, it is not there. Perfection and love cannot be separated. If you had asked me, what is love? It would have been more truthful, honest, sincere, authentic. But you are asking me, how can I love better? You have already accepted a fact that you know what love is. Not only that, your question implies that you already love. Now the question is how to better it. I don't want to hurt you, but I am helpless. I have to say the truth to you. You don't know what love is. You can't know because you have not yet gone deeper in your consciousness, you have not experienced yourself. You know nothing who you are. In this blindness, in this ignorance, in this unconsciousness, love does not grow. This is a desert in which you are living. In this darkness, in this desert, there is no possibility of love blossoming. First, you have to be full of light and full of delight. So full that you start overflowing. That overflowing energy is love. Then love is known as the greatest perfection in the world. It is never less and never more. But our very upbringing is so neurotic, so psychologically sick, that it destroys all possibilities of inner growth. You are being taught from the very beginning to be a perfectionist. And then naturally you go on applying your perfectionist idea to everything, even to love. Just the other day I came across a statement. A perfectionist is a person who takes great pains and gives even greater pains to others. And the outcome is just a miserable world. Everybody is trying to be perfect. And the moment somebody starts trying to be perfect, he starts expecting everybody else to be perfect. He becomes a condemnator. He starts humiliating people. That's what all your so-called saints have been doing down the ages. That's what your religions have done to you. Poisoned your being with an idea of perfection. Because you cannot be perfect, you start feeling guilty. You lose respect for yourself. And a man who has lost respect for himself has lost all dignity of being human. Your pride has been crushed. Your humanity has been destroyed by beautiful words like perfection. Man cannot be perfect. Yes, there is something which man can experience, but which is beyond the ordinary conception of man. Unless man also experiences something of the divine, he cannot know perfection. Perfection is not something like a discipline. It is not something that you can practice. It is not something that you have to go through rehearsals. But that is what is being taught to everybody. And the result is a world full of hypocrites who know perfectly well that they are hollow and empty, but they go on pretending all kinds of qualities which are nothing but empty words. When you say to someone, "I love you," have you ever thought, what do you mean? Is it just biological infatuation between two sexes? Then once you have satisfied your animal appetite, all so-called love will disappear. It was just a hunger. And you have fulfilled your hunger and you are finished. The same woman who was looking the most beautiful woman in the world, the same man who was looking like Alexander the Great, you start thinking how to get rid of this fellow. It will be very enlightening to you to understand this letter written by Paddy. To his beloved Maureen. My darling Maureen, I met you last night, but you did not show up. Next time I will meet you again, whether you show up or not. If I am there first, I will write my name on the gatepost to let you know. And if it is you that is first, rub out my name and nobody will be any the wiser. Darling Maureen, I would climb the highest mountain for your sake and swim the wildest sea. I would endure any hardships to spend a moment by your side. Your ever loving Paddy. P.S. I will be over to see you on Friday night if it is not raining. The moment you say to someone, "I love you," you don't know what you are saying. You don't know that it is just lust hiding behind a beautiful word, love. It will disappear. It is very momentary. Love is something eternal. It is the experience of the Buddhas, not the unconscious people with whom the whole world is full. Only very few people have known what love is. And these same people are the most awakened, the most enlightened, the highest peaks of human consciousness. If you really want to know love, forget about love. Remember about meditation. If you want to bring roses into your garden, forget about roses. Take care of the rose bush. Give nourishment to it, water it, take care that it gets the right amount of sun, water. If everything is taken care of in the right time, the roses are destined to come. You cannot bring them earlier. You cannot force them to open up sooner, and you cannot ask a rose flower to be more perfect. Have you ever seen a rose flower which is not perfect? What more do you want? Every rose flower in its uniqueness is perfect. Dancing in the wind, in the rain, in the sun, can't you see the tremendous beauty . The absolute joy a small, ordinary rose flower radiates, the hidden splendor of existence. Love is a rose flower in your being. But prepare your being. Dispel the darkness and the unconsciousness. Become more and more alert and aware, and love will come in its own accord. In its own time, you need not worry about it. And whenever it comes, it is always perfect. Love is an spiritual experience. Nothing to do with sexes and nothing to do with bodies, but something to do with the innermost being. But you have not even entered into your own temple. You don't know at all who you are. And you are asking about love. First be thyself. First know thyself. And love will come as a reward. It is a reward from the beyond. It showers on you like flowers, fills your being. And it goes on showering on you. And it brings with it a tremendous longing to share. That sharing can only be indicated in human language as love. It does not say much, but it indicates the right direction. Love is a shadow of alertness, of consciousness. I teach you to be more conscious and love will come. As you become more conscious, it is a guest that comes inevitably to those who are ready and prepared to receive it. You are not even ready to recognize it. If love comes to your door, you will not recognize it. If love knocks on your doors, you may find 1001 excuses. You may think, perhaps it is some strong wind. Or some other excuse. You will not open the doors. And even if you open the doors, you will not recognize love because you have never seen love before. How can you recognize it? You can recognize only something which you know. When love comes for the first time and fills your being, you are absolutely overwhelmed and mystified. You don't know what is happening. You know your heart is dancing. You know you are surrounded by celestial music. You know fragrances that you have never known before. But it takes a little time to put all these experiences together and to remember that perhaps this is what love is. slowly it sinks into your being. Love is not to be found in the poetries. My own experience is that the people who write poetries about love are the people who do not know love. I am personally acquainted with the great poets who have written beautiful poetries about love. And I know they have never experienced love. In fact, their poetries are just substitutes, consolations. By writing about love, they are deceiving themselves and others that they know love. Only mystics know love. Other than mystics, there is no category of human beings who have ever experienced love. Love is absolutely the monopoly of the mystic. If you want to know love, you will have to enter into the world of the mystic. Jesus says God is love. He has been part of a mystery school of Essenes, an ancient school of the mystics. But perhaps he did not graduate from the mystery school. Because what he is saying is just not right. God is not love. Love is God. And the difference is tremendous. It is not just a change of words. The moment you say God is love, you are simply saying that love is only an attribute of God. He is also wisdom. He is also compassion. He is also forgiveness. He can be millions of things besides love. Love is only one of the attributes of God. And in fact, even to make it a small attribute of God is very irrational and illogical. Because if God is love, then he cannot be just. If God is love, then he cannot be cruel enough to throw sinners into eternal hell. If God is love, then God cannot be the law. One great Sufi mystic, Umar Khayyam, shows more understanding than Jesus. when he says that I will go on just being myself, I am not going to take any notice of the priests and the preachers, because I trust that God's love is great enough. I cannot commit a sin which can be greater than His love. So why be worried? Our hands are small and our sins are small. Our reach is small. How can we commit sins which God's love cannot forgive? If God is love, then He cannot be present on the last judgment day to sort out the saints and throw the remaining millions and millions of people into hell for eternity. The teachings of the Essenes were just the opposite. Jesus quotes them wrongly. Perhaps he was not very deep rooted in their teachings. Their teaching was, love is God. That is such a tremendous difference. Now God becomes only an attribute of love. And now God becomes only a quality of the tremendous experience of love. Now God is no more a person, but only an experience of those who have known love. Now God becomes secondary to love. And I say unto you, the Essenes were right. Love is the ultimate value, the final flowering. There is nothing beyond it. Hence, you cannot perfect it. In fact, before you attain to it, you will have to disappear. When love will be there, you will not be there. A great Eastern mystic, Kabir, has a very significant statement. A statement that can be made only by one who has experienced, who has realized, who has entered into the inner sanctum of ultimate reality. The statement is, that I had been searching for truth, but it is strange to say that as long as the searcher was there, truth was not found. And when the truth was found, I looked all around. I was absent. When the truth was found, the seeker was no more. And when the seeker was, truth was nowhere. Truth and the seeker cannot exist together. You and love cannot exist together. There is no coexistence possible. Either you or love. You can choose. If you are ready to disappear, melt and merge, leaving only a pure consciousness behind, love will blossom. You cannot perfect it because you will not be present. And it does not need perfection in the first place. It comes always as perfect. But love is one of those words which everybody uses and nobody understands. Parents are telling to their children, "We love you." And they are the people who destroy their children. They are the people who give their children all kinds of prejudices, all kinds of dead superstitions. They are the people who burden their children with the whole load of rubbish that generations have been carrying on, and each generation goes on transferring it to another generation, and the madness goes on becoming mountainous. And yet all parents think they love their children. If they really loved their children, they will not like their children to be their images, because they are just miserable and nothing else. What is their experience of life? Pure misery, suffering. Life has been not a blessing to them but a curse, and still they want their children just to be like themselves. I was a guest in a family. I was sitting in their garden in the evening. The sun was setting, and it was a beautiful, silent evening. The birds were returning back to the trees. And a small child of the family was sitting by my side. I just asked him, "Do you know who you are?" And children are more clear, more perceptive than the grown-ups, because the grown-ups are already spoiled. corrupted, polluted with all kinds of ideologies, religions, that a small child looked at me and he said, "You are asking me a very difficult question." I said, "What is the difficulty in it?" He said, "The difficulty is, I am the only child of my parents, and as long as I can remember, whenever some guests come, somebody says, my eyes look like my father. Somebody says, my nose looks like my mother. Somebody says, my face looks like my uncle." So I don't know who I am, because nobody says anything looks like me. I said, "This is really difficult." But this is what is being done to every child. You don't leave the child alone to experience himself. And you don't leave the child to become himself. You go on loading on the child your own unfulfilled ambitions. My personal physician is Dr. Amrito. His father was also a well-known physician. And his father has left in his will a strange condition, that Amrito will be able to get his heritage if he fulfills a condition. And the condition is that the day he is accepted by the Royal Society of Physicians as a fellow of the society, he will be able to get the money from the bank. If he never becomes a fellow, if he is not accepted by the Royal Society of the Physicians, which is the most significant fellowship in the whole world as far as physicians are concerned. When I came to know about it, I could see the incomplete ambition of the poor father. He would have longed his whole life to become the fellow of the Royal Society. Now he is burdening his son with his ambition. He will be gone, but still he wants his ambition to be fulfilled. And if the son cannot fulfill the condition, he will be left as a beggar on the streets. He will not be able to inherit his father's lifelong savings, and he is the only son. The money will rot in the bank, but he cannot get it. Fortunately, he managed and managed far better than the father would have ever dreamt of. He was accepted as the fellow of the Royal Society of Physicians, as the youngest man in the whole history. People are accepted when they become old, experienced, when they have written many books and papers and done many researches and contributed much. Amrita did everything very quickly. He is the youngest. Fellow of the Royal Society. But every parent is wanting that his child should be his image. But a child has a destiny of his own. If he becomes your image, he will never become himself. And without becoming yourself, you will never feel contentment. You will never feel at ease with existence. You will be always in a condition of missing something. Your parents love you and they also tell you that you have to love them because they are your fathers, they are your mothers. It is a strange phenomenon. And nobody seems to be aware of it. Just because you are a mother does not mean that the child has to love you. You have to be lovable. Your being a mother is not enough. You may be a father. That does not mean that automatically you become lovable. Just because you are a father does not create a tremendous feeling of love in the child. But it is expected. And the poor child does not know what to do. He starts pretending. That's the only possible way. He starts smiling when there is no smile in his heart. He starts showing love, respect, gratitude, and all are just false. He becomes an actor. a hypocrite from the very beginning, a politician. We are all living in this world where parents, teachers, priests, everybody has corrupted you, displaced you, has taken away from yourself . My effort here is to give your center back to you. I call this centering meditation. I want you simply to be yourself. With a great self-respect, with a dignity that existence needed you, and then you can start searching for yourself. First come to the center and then start searching who you are. Knowing one's original face is the beginning of a life of love, of a life of celebration. You will be able to give so much love, because it is not something that is exhaustible, because it is immeasurable, it cannot be exhausted. And the more you give it, the more you become capable of giving it. And the greatest experience in life is when you simply give without any conditions, without any expectations, without even a simple thank you. On the contrary, a real authentic love feels obliged to the person who has accepted his love. He could have rejected it. When you start giving love with a deep sense of gratitude to all those who accept it, you will be surprised that you have become an emperor, no more a beggar asking for love with a begging bowl knocking on every door. And those people you are knocking on their doors cannot give love to you, they are themselves beggars. I have heard about two great astrologers. Every morning they used to meet on a certain crossroad. From there, their paths separated. They practiced into different parts of the city. But it was almost a daily ritual, meeting on the crossroads before departing towards their sections of the city, and they used to show their hands to each other that what is my destiny today. And they were great astrologers. They were telling people their destinies, and they were not knowing their own destiny, for which they had to consult another astrologer who was consulting them. They each read the lines of the other and predicted. Beggars are asking each other for love and feel frustrated, angry, because the love is not coming. But this is bound to happen. Love belongs to the world of emperors, not of the beggars. And a man is an emperor when he is so full of love that he can give it without any conditions. And then comes even a greater surprise, that when you start giving your love to anybody, even to strangers, because the question is not to whom you are giving it, just the very joy of giving is so much. Who cares who is on the receiving end? When this space comes into your being, that you go on giving to each and everybody, not only to human beings, but to animals, to the trees, to the faraway stars, because love is something that can be transferred even to the farthest star just by your loving look. Just by your touch, to a tree, love can be transferred without saying a single word. It can be conveyed in absolute silence. And when I am saying it, I am not only saying it, I am a living example of whatever I am saying to you. Can't you feel my love, although I have never said to you? It need not to be said. It declares itself. It has its own ways of reaching into the very deep into your being. First, be full of love. Then the sharing happens. And then the great surprise, that as you give, you start receiving from unknown sources, from unknown corners, from unknown people, from trees, from rivers, from mountains, from all nooks and corners of existence, love starts showering on you. The more you give, the more you get. Life becomes a sheer dance of love. To me, this is the state of enlightenment. Pure love. And except pure love, there is no God.
Could you tell me if you are crucifying me or burning me?
Yes. Just now I have been talking about love. Your question opens another dimension of love. There is a cross on which a man like Jesus was crucified. It is of destruction and death, hate, violence and anger. It does not create anything. It only destroys. It is ugly. But there is also another cross, the cross of love. It destroys in you all that is false, and it resurrects in you all that is authentic, all that is true. It kills you on one hand and it revives you on another hand. It kills only that which you are not, but you have been identifying yourself with it. It destroys your false identity, your personality, your hypocrisy. And as your falseness is destroyed, your truth shines forth, radiates with tremendous beauty. The ancient seers of the East has called the Master as a death and a resurrection. The disciple goes through the being of the Master All that is false will be burnt, and all that is true will come out in its immense glory and splendor, freed from all chains and bondages, in absolute beauty, freedom, grace, and eternal joy. Jayas, I am certainly crucifying you, but this is the you that you are not. Every creator has to destroy to create. Just see a master sculptor. I am reminded of a very beautiful story about Leonardo da Vinci. He was passing through the market where marble rocks were sold, and before the greatest shop he saw lying on the other side of the road a huge marble rock. He asked the shopkeeper, "How much it will cost for me to take that rock?" The shopkeeper said, "It has been there lying almost for a decade. Nobody seems to have any interest in it. You are the first man in these 10 years who has even inquired about it. I will give it free to you. You just take it away. It is unnecessarily taking my space. It is so ugly and so strange that I don't think you can make anything out of it." The sculptor took it, and after 3 years he came back to the shop, invited the owner to see something that he has made. He has made a beautiful statue of Jesus with his mother. When Jesus is brought down from the cross, he is lying almost dead, bleeding, unconscious, in the lap of his mother. Just few years before, the statue was destroyed by a madman. It was thought to be one of the greatest pieces of art. And the madman destroyed it and told in the court that I have destroyed it deliberately to become world famous. He became world famous. His picture was all over in all the magazines and papers. His name was suddenly became world known. But this beautiful statue, I have seen the picture of it. Jesus looks so beautiful. His mother, with tears in her eyes. The statue looks so alive. It seems Jesus is going to stand up. It is one of the most mysterious creations of man. The owner of the shop could not believe. When the sculptor said that it is from the same rock that you had given me free, the shopkeeper asked him, but how you could even dream about that that ugly rock could be transformed into such a beautiful piece? The sculptor said, I had not dreamt about it. In fact, as I was passing by the side of the rock, Jesus called me, that I am encased in this rock, help me to be freed. And all that I have done is not to create Jesus and Mary. I have simply taken away the unnecessary parts of the rock. My work has been only of eliminating the false, the unnecessary. And what has remained is God's grace. The function of the Master is the same, to take away all that is false in you and the real and the true and the authentic will be revealed the moment the false is taken away. The Master never gives you anything, he only takes away the false, and the truth is already there, just the unnecessary has to be eliminated. Yes, Jesus, I am crucifying you so that you can have a resurrection, but my cross is that of love. It is not to kill you. In fact, you are dead as you are. It is to give you a taste of eternal life. It is to revive you, it is to call you from your grave to come out. Yes, in the beginning it looks like crucifixion, but it is really part of the process of resurrection. Your question is significant. And you are asking me also, could you tell me if you are crucifying me or burning me? As far as burning is concerned, just the other day, a woman came from England. Her sister was a sannyasin almost 10 years before. In an accident, and it was her own fault, she burnt herself. We tried everything that was possible here, and when we saw that in India, perhaps she will not be able to recover. Her whole skin has been burnt. I send Dr. Amrito to take the girl back to England, where better and up-to-date facilities are available. He took her to England. We arranged all the expenses for her traveling, for her medical care in England. But she could not be cured. She died. And after 10 years comes this woman, goes to Dr. Amrito, very angry. That we cannot forget it ever. My mother is still angry. I am angry that you killed my sister. Amrito said, this is strange. It was her own fault. She got burnt. We managed every expenses here, and seeing that perhaps she needs better facilities, more up-to-date technology, we took her to England. We made every arrangement. Accidents can happen anywhere. When I heard this, I said, these people seem to be absolutely stupid. They don't know anything about India. Here, everybody finally gets burnt. There are, of course, one alternative. You can get burnt and then you can die. Or you can die first and then you can be burnt. The choice is yours. Most of the people choose the second. It is just a question of liking. But everybody here in this country has to be burnt finally. So if you are asking about burning, it will happen. But not right now. Jayas, there is much more for you to do. And as far as you are concerned, burning is not your problem, it is the problem of other sannyasis. You will be dead. Unless you choose the other alternative. You are too young. Yet to think about such things. I will give you few maxims to think over instead. The saints are the sinners who keep on trying. Meditate over on it. Take a risk. Even a turtle gets nowhere until he sticks his neck out. A man does not need 20/20 eyesight to appreciate a 36/24/36 vision. Nothing wrong ever happens at the right time. Save your money. It is more particularly significant for Jayas because he is my treasurer. Save your money. You never know when your friends will need it. Jayas is a busy man, extremely busy. Hence a special maxim for him. A busy man is usually a happy man, unless he is busy scratching. Never judge a woman's feet by the shape of her shoes. Success is when you have your name in everything except the phone book. Salesmanship is the difference between rape and rapture. Whiskey may not cure a cold, but no remedy fails with such satisfaction. Not all philosophers are married men, but all married men become philosophers. Jayesh, this is not the time for you to be burned. This is the time to have a good time. The priest traveling on a first-class sleeper train had a double compartment all to himself. Having just finished his dinner in the dining car, he returned to his compartment, but was shocked to find two scantily dressed, sexy-looking girls inside. He immediately cried out, "You girls are in the wrong compartment. I am a respectable man, the pillar of my community, and there has never ever been the smallest whip of a scandal about me in my whole life." So the priest continued, pulling himself up to his full height, "One of you girls will have to go." Jayesh, when the burning will come, it will come. We will celebrate it. It is a promise. Meanwhile, you enjoy the life as much as you can. It is none of your business to worry about things which are going to happen after your death. Life is so precious. Not a single moment has to be wasted about thinking what will happen after death. Here in India, it is certain burning will happen. So you can be absolutely unworried and unconcerned. And you will not be the one who will have to take care about the burning. And you will not be the one who will be burnt on the funeral pyre. You will be a witness standing in the crowd of the celebrant sannyasins. The only difference will be you will not be visible anymore. But that is not a misfortune. Just think of the great adventures when you become invisible. Thank you.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.